was a big week for Microsoft and a surprising one for many people who follow the tech industry and the business world. The Redmond tech giant saw its market value climb to the point that it's rivaling Apple for the title of the most valuable publicly traded company in the U.S. Microsoft has changed its focus under CEO Satya Nadella, and one of the ways that you can see that change in focus is the company's Surface hardware business. A new book called Beneath a Surface, published this week, goes inside the Microsoft Surface hardware division to explore the changes happening there and, by extension, in the broader company. It's an insightful read, and we have on the line with us the author, Brad Sams, who is a journalist who has covered Microsoft for more than 10 years. He's executive editor with Thurrott.com and Petri.com. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Happy to be here. You know, you did a wonderful job writing up some of the stuff I've been working on for, well, about 8 months or so. And it's the least that I could do to hang out with you for a little bit.
Nice. Awesome. So let's talk about Microsoft and the Surface business. But I want to start big picture with the company, because it was a big week for Microsoft, where it was getting a lot of headlines about its market value rivaling Apple's. There's been a lot of changes at the company over the past few years, which your book gets into as a microcosm of what's happening there. But I've got to ask you, were you surprised this past week to see Microsoft's overall value starting to rival Apple's?
You know, there's a couple things to unpack here, because to your point, it's interesting timing. It's great timing for me personally, but there's a couple things to note here. First off, I actually talked to Microsoft a couple times this week, and I asked them, and this is all on background or whatever they want to call it. They want to give me any official quotes, but to them, they don't care. This doesn't change what they're going to do tomorrow. This doesn't alter their plan in any single way. It's just a metric which I don't want to say is completely useless, but it's only really usable when you're going to go buy a company. But the other side of this narrative, Todd, is that Apple was at a $1 trillion valuation 3 months ago, and now they're down in the lower 800. So while Microsoft has gone up, Apple has dropped significantly. And so it's interesting to watch, but I'm not all that surprised. I mean, Microsoft has done a wonderful job pivoting their entire business. And I think that they have a lot of runway ahead of them. It may not be where everybody wants it to be. I think there's a lot of consumer fans out there who want Windows 10 to be the best thing ever. And they want all these, the Windows Phone and all that stuff. But in the enterprise world, they have tons of runway.
If somebody had told you 5 years ago that Microsoft would be the most valuable U.S. company, or one of the two most valuable U.S. companies publicly traded, would you have believed them?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know if it's not that I wouldn't believe them. I think my gut reaction would have been like, I can see how they can get there, but can they execute to make it happen?
That's a great point. I got to say, I was surprised this week. I knew, obviously, that Apple had been through a lot of turmoil that had reduced their overall market value, and clearly Microsoft has done a big turnaround here, or at least a refocusing under Satya Nadella. But if you would have told me that 5 years ago, I would have said that you were full of it. Maybe I was too skeptical. Do you think that's a possibility for a lot of folks out there about Microsoft in general?
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, it's real easy for me to say that, yeah, as long as they execute, I can see it happening. But to your point, at the same time, they've gone through some really rough patches. I mean, they lost around $10 billion. They're totally out of the mobile phone market. Knowing that and being like, okay, they're going to become the most valuable company in the world without a smartphone, that does sound kind of crazy. It really does.
Well, and that gets straight to the topic of your book, Beneath a Surface, which really gets into Microsoft's hardware business. And somebody might say, well, their hardware business, this is not the core part of the company. But one reason your book was so fascinating to me is that the turnaround that's happened in the Surface business mirrors the turnaround that's happened in the broader company. And it's for largely the same reasons. Can you explain what's happened in the Microsoft Surface business over the last 4 years?
How much time do we have, Todd?
Broad strokes, Brad. Broad strokes.
Yeah, yeah. No, no. I mean, there's a lot of things that went on. And I've been wanting to write this book for a couple of years, honestly. But I was trying to find the right time when I knew that Surface was going to stick around. And I was laughing so hard earlier this year when an analyst said Microsoft's going to get out of the Surface business or the hardware business in 2019. And I'm like in the middle of writing this book. I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be terrible if he turns out to be true. But there's a couple major inflection points in the Surface brand. The first being that, hey, we're going to build hardware. That's a big step. I think looking back, it's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty easy. They make the software. Why not make the hardware? You got to remember, all of their OEM partners, when Microsoft said they were going to build hardware, got very angry, some publicly, some privately. And so that's the first major one. The second major inflection point in the Surface brand is when they realized that Surface can't be a true representation of Windows, which is what it was intended to be. If you look at how they launched the first Surface, they said it is a stage for Windows 8. And what that meant is that it had to have a lot of baggage. It means it had to have been a good media player. It had to have been a good productivity device. It had to be a good mobile laptop. It had to be a good powerhouse laptop. It had to be so many things that Windows currently was, and that's how they were pitching it. And once they realized that that's not their strategy, that's when the whole thing took off, because they said, okay, it can't be a great media device. And that's why they launched Groove. That's why they had a video store. That's why they had all these things that kind of look like a digital version of Apple, but in the Microsoft world. Once they realized that, hey, this isn't how we're going to monetize this thing, that's when the product took off. And that's the next major inflection point, when they said, okay, this is a productivity machine. And we saw that at the very middle of about the Surface Pro 2 life cycle, when they started offering it in the channel, started selling it direct to enterprise companies. They built a dock in 24 hours. Somebody went to Ralph, the lead designer, and said, we need a dock. And he said, we don't have the capacity to build a dock. And I actually talked to Ralph in New York about this, because this is one of those stories that I was told that, like, there's no way I can verify this. And so we're in New York at the Surface Pro 6 event, and there's Ralph just chatting away, just being his gleeful self. And I said, hey, Ralph, I got a crazy question for you. I heard you build a dock in 24 hours. And like his face just lit up, because you could tell he was like, yeah, we did. And then it sold like crazy. And he told me the whole story about how it happened.
So for people who don't know, can you explain who Ralph is?
Yeah, Ralph is the industrial designer for Microsoft. So there's kind of a tent or a triangle of people. You have Panos Panay, who is at the very top, and he is ultimately in charge of Surface now. And then he has two lead lieutenants, as I kind of refer to them. You have Stevie Batish. He is the engineering. He is all things display. He is the guts, the Steve Wozniak type personality. And then you have Ralph Groen. I can never pronounce his last name correct. He is the kind of the Johnny Ive, if you will. That's probably undercutting his value a little bit, but he is the industrial designer. He's the guy that is, you know, designing the things that you're physically touching. And so between these three guys, they make up the core of Surface. And the biggest turning point in the entire Surface brand is when they changed their aspect ratio to be taller instead of so wide. So they talked about 16:9 as being a Hollywood aspect ratio, and they went to, I always forget, it's 4:3 display ratio for Surface. And that, quite literally how that came about, was they were looking at emails in Outlook, and they said, gosh, we need more room up top to make this work on Surface. And so there you go. That is how they decided, you know, what if we just squeeze this thing together and make it taller so that we can get more emails on our display? And that's how they came up with a new display size for Surface.
And that was in 2014. And as you write, that was a pivotal moment, because not only did they come out with this new aspect ratio more suitable to productivity with the Surface Pro 3, mm-hmm. but they simultaneously killed another product that was about 2 days, 48 hours away from release, the Surface Mini. And yeah. I remember at the time, and actually went back and read some of your stories, it seemed, at least, and forgive me if I'm reading too much into what you wrote back then, I think you were a little disappointed at the time that they killed the Surface Mini, but I think in the course of reporting and writing this book, you came to understand it better. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I don't think you're too far off. I mean, at the time, there was a lot of things going on at Microsoft and in my personal career, because I just started to kind of figure out how I fit into this blogging world and like what I'm a big believer that every time you write something, there needs to be a paragraph that explains why somebody should read your post over anybody else's. You know, it's your insight, your experience, or whatever. And it was right around this time that I was finally figuring that stuff out. And I had been writing about the Surface Mini a ton. And then when you get to the event and it doesn't launch, like this thing I've been writing about for 6-8 months at that time wasn't there. It was just like a big needle in the balloon. I was like, oh my gosh, like it's, I misled everybody. And this is all bad. And then fortunately, Microsoft screwed up, as they so often do, off to our benefit, in the reviewer's guide for the Surface Pro 3. Surface Mini was just laden all over the place.
That is Brad Sams. He is the author of the new book, Beneath a Surface, Going Inside Microsoft's Hardware and Devices Business. It's a microcosm of the change that's happened at the company under CEO Satya Nadella. We'll have more with Brad coming up after a break. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to GeekWire. We're talking this week with Brad Sams, the author of the new book, Beneath a Surface, Going Inside Microsoft's Hardware and Devices Division. So it was obvious that they were going to release this thing, and you tell the behind-the-scenes story of the unreleased Surface Mini, and just a teaser for folks, you actually got your hands on one at one point. Yeah. It was the lost Surface Mini. It's a great story in the book. But the gist was that Microsoft realized, hey, their best strategy was not to try and compete directly with Apple and the iPad Mini with a substandard app store, but instead to focus on productivity and do something different that played to Microsoft's own strengths. And the reason I love this story is because it actually tells the larger story. This is essentially what Microsoft has done across its businesses under Satya Nadella.
Yep, you're exactly right. It's the Surface story, to your point, is a microcosm of what was happening inside the company. They were figuring it out that productivity was their moneymaker. Productivity needed to be cool because that's what Microsoft was. And once they understood that productivity was their true marching orders in this world, the entire company essentially turned around. They got really good at being focused about what was important for Microsoft. And there was a lot of tension at this time too. I mean, you got to remember, at the Surface Pro 3 launch, this is the first time Satya Nadella as CEO was there. Their mobile assets they'd just bought from Nokia, which was very contentious in the boardroom with Steve Ballmer and the entire board basically yelling at each other. Steve Ballmer wanted the entire thing. The board said, you can have the mobile assets. And their smartphone market share was on decline. Windows 8 was tanking harder than anything they'd ever seen. And their whole business model that they were used to from yesterday was under attack. And here's this little Surface team that just had a $900 million write-down with a new CEO. Their back's against the wall. And if they don't do something great, they're all out of a job.
And at the time, Panos Panay, the head of the Surface business, he actually argued for the release of the Surface Mini against the Surface, or against the senior leadership team. Do you think that he's come to also accept that that was the right decision for Microsoft to make, to kill that product?
I believe so, but I wasn't able to officially confirm that. Other things that I had heard, I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal notes that I have that I didn't want to write something unless I was very confident it was right. There were other reports that Joe Belfiore was like standing behind Panos, like, you know, up and down saying that this has to launch. This is a big thing. And so I know that Panos was initially disappointed because he really liked this thing. And he still has one to this day, along with a couple other engineers. But I would have to think that at this point in time, looking back, knowing the future of Windows RT and how that played out, it's hard to argue that you can't be, I mean, he's probably disappointed that thing physically didn't launch, but at the same time, I think everybody came to the conclusion eventually that this was not the future direction for Windows. And in that regard, he probably is happy because he didn't have a failure on his hands.
This is great. I feel like I need to do like a key for folks. So Joe Belfiore, longtime Windows executive. So it's significant that he was giving Panos Panay, the Surface chief, his backing. And Windows RT, the original version of Microsoft's operating system for ARM processors, which are the processors in most mobile phones, and they basically shifted away or expanded beyond Intel for that one release. And that is really kind of one of the dilemmas that the Surface team has faced over the years, whether they should be developing for those mobile processors or for traditional Intel chips.
Yeah, there's like another story that I didn't include that's been floating around. Have you ever noticed that there's no Intel stickers on any Surface hardware?
Interesting. So like the traditional Intel inside that you would see on other machines. No. So what's the deal?
From what I've heard, that was a Terry Myerson thing. He has a very strong, or had, since he's no longer there, had a very strong disdain for Intel. And he didn't want these things on his devices.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
So I believe one of the deals is that if Intel put that sticker on your device, Intel will give you some marketing dollars. I believe that is part of that arrangement. I don't know how it works for everybody, but that's what I was told. And they were like, we don't need Intel's money. We can market this ourselves and we don't have to put their dumb little sticker on there. And they've held us back so many times. It's like, yes, it runs on Intel, but there is a very strong movement inside of Microsoft, and you still see it to this day, that to not be fully reliant on that company.
It's interesting because Apple has done something very similar in terms of it developing its own custom chips to not be reliant on any one chip maker, at least for things like iPads and iPhones. So speaking of phones, the end of your book includes a roadmap for the Surface team and 2019 potential product releases. And you're very careful about saying, hey, this is the snapshot as of now and the plan for where they want to go, but it could change. But apart from the various devices that you mentioned, there is a mention of Andromeda. Can you explain for people who have not followed this story what this potential device is?
Yeah, so Andromeda was initially described as a pocketable device with two displays. So if you looked at sort of what Samsung launched or announced earlier this month, I believe it was, it's just imagine two candy bar phones that are solid displays, and it folds in half, and it creates almost like looking like a Nintendo, I believe it's Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
It's just a clamshell with two displays. It's nothing too crazy, but it's a little crazy for Microsoft because, one, something that's pocketable with a display that fits in your pocket sounds a heck of a lot like a phone, doesn't it? And so Microsoft has been working on this thing for at least 18 months, at least if not longer, under super secrecy and all that good stuff. And so it's been rumored for release. Microsoft has published a ton of patents around this thing. And the big question becomes, what's its future? I got tipped off June or something like that, that, hey, this thing isn't actually going to launch, because it was intended to actually come out this year at one point. And so Microsoft put it back into the oven, if you will, and keeps working on this thing. And so there's multiple iterations of that form factor. There's a larger version, which is scheduled for release in Q4 of 2019. And Andromeda does still exist. It's just not sure if it's ever going to leave that kind of prototype design stage right now. And the one kind of differentiator with that thing is that it supported LTE connectivity. But Microsoft... you got to understand, Microsoft lost $10 billion on Nokia, maybe even a little more. They're a little nervous about launching anything that is even remotely like a phone at this point in their history.
So that actually gets into the question that many Windows Phone fans would ask. Do you think that they ever will actually come out with their own phone again?
I never is a really bad word to use in a public forum. I wouldn't say they would never launch a phone again. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that they are going to ever launch a traditional phone like we know today. Here's the kind of thing that's happening in Surface right now. Right now, Surface has a really good thing going on. They made $4.6 billion in revenue last year. We don't know how much of that was net income, but candidly, it doesn't matter a whole lot. What they have is a product line that they know that they can just update iteratively with the Surface Pro and the Surface Laptop, and it will continue to do well. What that frees them up to do is to be a little bit more risky. And so we're going to see them try to push things out a little bit that maybe aren't traditional devices. But here's the thing. they can take that risk because it's not an underlying driver of their business. Like if they launch a product and it only does okay, it's not like Surface or Microsoft tanks. Their OEM partners cannot take those risks. And so I think what we're going to see is Surface start to take more risks with more form factors. Now the question becomes, is any of those ever become a phone? I don't fully know, but I think that they will skirt around that issue with LTE or more than likely 5G connectivity built in. And do you want to use Skype on there that has telephony capabilities and add your own number? I absolutely could see that happening, but will they come out and say, here is a Surface phone? I don't think that they would call it. I could see them coming out with something called like a Surface Pocket. That's a Windows PC literally in your pocket that runs on some form of a chip and has eSIM capabilities, and you can do with it what you want.
We're talking with Brad Sams, whose new book is Beneath a Surface. It's available now. You can find it at beneathasurface.com or on Amazon as an ebook. Brad, big picture, what would be your key takeaway for folks? Things that you might have learned, something that was new to your understanding about Microsoft through the telling of this Surface story?
The big thing to me, and actually Mary Jo Foley pointed this out, because sometimes when you write a book like this, you get kind of lost in it because you see it so often, and I've been looking at it for 8 months, but she looked at it and read it and said, you know what's kind of neat about this is you can dynamically see how Microsoft tries something, it fails, they adapt. Try something, fails, it adapts. Try something, it wins, they go with it. And the thing that I take away from this is that Microsoft has finally figured out their business. They figured out how they fit in the world, and they know how to extract value from how they fit in the world, which is a differentiator because they know how to turn it into a business. And I think they see the path forward for Surface. And the big thing that Microsoft wanted to do with Surface was to be able to control their own destiny. No matter what happens with HP, Dell, Acer, Lenovo, all those guys, if they all build Chromebooks, Microsoft still controls its own PC destiny. And I think that is the big takeaway, and they're not going away.
Brad Sams, thanks very much for talking with us.
Very much appreciate it. And you guys keep being awesome. I remember when you launched GeekWire, and I was like, man, this is going to be interesting. And I know the downward pressures you guys face, and you guys have done a wonderful job.
Brad, I already wrote the review. You can stop sucking up. I'm channeling your colleague Paul Thurrott there with my bluntness, so say hi to him. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. If you're not already, you should subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Just search GeekWire, that's all one word, in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you like what we do, consider leaving us a rating and a review. It really does help other people find the show. You can see more of our coverage at geekwire.com. The GeekWire podcast is produced by Claire McGrain. In fact, this is Claire's last show before she goes on to a new journey. Claire, it's been great having you here, and thanks for all your work. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.